It is I, Juliet.
Tis I, Leisha.
Tis Screen Tea Podcast.
The first clusterfuck that we opened with.
Yeah, she's not good at improv.
Well, when you open and just very confidently introduce yourself with my name with no forewarning, I was thrown by the wayside.
Eh.
Whatevs. But yes, tis us. Week late?
Meh.
Yeah.
Life.
Tis what tis.
It was Thanksgiving, and you have in the middle of finals.
I'm still in the middle of finals. Finals are never going to end.
I mean, they have to. They're finals.
The name would suggest.
The child is
the
not
disembodied
asleep.
Voice in the background.
So anyway, what are you drinking, I guess?
I had to pull up the name of it because from the time that it took me to make it to the time that it took me to walk into the room, I forgot.
Memory vampire.
Yeah, pretty much. It's walking through the doorway. Did I ever explain that to you?
I mean, I've heard theories, various theories.
I mean, yeah, it's like a natural psychological phenomenon.
And then there's memory vampire.
No. Walking through...
You're rude.
Walking through a doorway, like, your brain learns mm-hmm. that doorway separates rooms, so it compartmentalizes. That's why you walk into a room. Don't say memory vampire!
No, but I got you to say it.
Fuck. When you walk into a room for something, that's why sometimes you'll walk into the room and forget what you went in there for.
I forget what I'm doing all the time, just sitting in place.
Are you a memory vampire?
I'm a shitty memory vampire.
Anyway, I'm drinking a tea called Natural Glow, which apparently is organic white tea with organic osmanthus. Nope.
Osmanthus.
Shut up. Or organic osmanthus flowers. It tastes like tea. It's one of those, like, yes, this tastes like just straight up tea. It's good. It's just not very super flavorful.
I, once again.
Oh, God.
Have citrus lavender.
My God.
We don't have a lot for uncaffeinated, especially ones that I like.
We have a whole box of various...
That I just looked at, and I didn't want to drink the elderberry again, even though it was good. But yeah.
Huh. There are so many different uncaffeinated flavors in there.
That I've had and don't want right now.
You never want them right now. We have like 8 different uncaffeinated flavors. You just go for the your creature of habit.
I don't know if we have that many. I was just looking at it.
Ooh, the marriage is strong here because my ass is tempted to go count run out.
Jesus Christ. Anyway.
Anywho, we just gonna do this. Oh yeah, we were talking about how we were a week late and then the baby woke up. And by baby, I mean full ass grown child. We have, yeah, this is probably in the new year going to be like a, we will get episodes out when we get episodes out, hopefully on a weekly basis. However, I have learned that grad school is much more to juggle when I have a said full-grown-ass child and also a full-time job. And it's so much writing.
Yeah.
And reading. So, we do this.
And I just started a job, which I'm only part-time, but that'll be up in hours soon.
Yep. So, got the real world shit happening. So, we will get to you when we can get to you. But our next 4 films, guaranteed, what we can say about them is that they're animated. We do know that. Regardless if they all get out in December or not.
Wah-wah.
So that should
be fun.
I
mean, when's your last day of schooling?
Who knows? They keep... I just had a professor say, this shit's due on the 7th, even though the end of term is the 4th. So, I don't know. The 7th at the latest, Sunday. I'm going to say Sunday. Anywho.
Wah wah.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you ready
for
the real question?
I guess.
I was kind of expecting you to, like, say the words before me since you did that for a hot second.
No.
All right. This 2 weeks real question was, what is your favorite movie about a movie?
Wah wah.
We had some fun answers. We had two votes for Tropic Thunder.
Yes.
And we had The Aviator, which for a hot second almost watched instead of the movie that we did watch.
Yeah, a real hot moment because we had a fuck up.
Amazon kind of fucked up because you did what you were supposed to.
What's funny is Amazon fucked up and then saved the day. I did what I was supposed to. I ordered this film, which is, it's a British film.
Because I like British film, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, it's great. And I made sure to order the right copy on Amazon. There are two different links you can click on. One of them has the warning that says, this may not play on all players because it's fucking foreign. It's not actually what it says. I made sure to not order that one. I ordered the other one. And they sent us the one that won't play in our players.
I don't think they have a Blu-ray version that works. Even though their site says that the one doesn't have a warning, I was looking on the Wikipedia and it was like released in DVD in the USA on such and such date. So I don't think that they have a Blu-ray version available in the United States, period. Unless you have a player that can play Region B movies.
Well, let us fucking hope that the Blu-ray that I just ordered that's sitting in the mailbox plays in our shit. It's a Spanish language film.
It might.
I think it's Puerto Rican.
It might.
It fucking better. I have to look into where exactly it was filmed.
Yeah, I mean,
it should. It's not European.
It's kind of dumb because so DVDs use numbers like 1, 2, 3, 4 or whatever for their regions, and then Blu-rays use letters. So that's what like confused me at first because it was actually staring me in the face on the back of the box for this movie, and I was just like, what's the answer? And it's like, it'll be on the disc or the back of the box. And I was like, but I don't see a number anywhere. And then I like kept looking. I was like, they use fucking letters. And I was like, fuck you.
Anywho, then Amazon saved the day because it ended up being free on Prime anyway.
Which is so dumb.
Anyways, yes, we almost watched The Aviator instead because we had a panic moment of, oh shit, we're not going to be able to watch it in time.
Yes. Anyway, and then we had The Disaster Artist. And then we had The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou, Get Shorty, Saving Mr. Banks, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back.
Yes, yes.
What was your favorite?
Honestly, I think my favorite movie about a movie, if this answer counts, is probably The Blair Witch Project.
Interesting.
That's probably mine.
A movie about them. Yeah, technically.
They're making a documentary film. It's probably my favorite.
That's interesting.
Probably. If not, if that one, since it's found footage, and if someone got real technical, then my default would probably have to go down to Tropic Thunder.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of what I thought you'd pick.
Mm-hmm.
My answer was Adaptation. Because that's a fucking great movie.
It's a good movie.
Fucking great.
I'm kind of surprised that nobody said Argo. That's a really good movie. I'm just a little bit surprised at that, but I don't know. Yeah. Shrug. Yeah. It is what it is, what it is. Yep. This was an interesting question because I think I had two people text me and be like, what counts? Right. What is this? Yeah. What do you mean?
Specify.
But there's a whole ass Wikipedia list. Like, Google movie about movies, and there are so many movies about making
Funnily enough, I did that, and it just gave me, like, it didn't give me what I wanted at first. I had, like, I had to finagle my keywords to get, like, what I wanted.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It gave me, it gave me, like, how-to-ish
That's cute.
Movies, or, like, you know... yeah, just give me, like, movies about making movies. Yeah. Not, like, actual films about making movies.
I can see that.
So I was just like, not quite. But the movie that we are watching tonight is Son of Rambo.
This movie with a W. With a W. Son of Rambo with a W. This movie showed up on a lot of those lists.
Yes, it fucking did. Yep,
because, yeah, it's a great movie.
Once I finagled my keywords. It came out in 2007. It was directed by Garth Jennings, who is also known for directing Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, Sing 2, and the short film Madam. It was also written by Garth Jennings, who isn't really known for writing a lot, but they did 2 episodes of The Adam and Joe Show. This was an interesting note, devised the short, I think, Aaron, and then he wrote the animated musical Sing, as well as Sing 2. It was produced by Hammer and Tongs, which is Garth Jennings' production company.
Cute.
Celluloid Dreams, Good Film Productions, Arte France Cinema Network, Movie Film, Lord, I'm so sorry.
On Fern's production.
Reason Pictures, Sophie Cinema 2, Sophie Cinema 3, Zweites Deutsches
Fernsehen.
Yep. Our powers combined.
We can speak shitty German.
Shit.
So sorry.
Yeah, I am so sorry. I wasn't like my friends in high school that took German. I took Spanish.
I took French, so we're just going to fuck this all kinds of up. Some individual producers, Bristol Boffin, Christian Bout, Trevor Evans, Benjamin Goldhirsch, Nick Goldsmith, Peter Natterman, Hengmei Panahi, Michelle Ryhlick, Jane Robertson, and Meinhof Zulhorst.
That's a great name.
Meinhof Zulhorst?
I like that a lot.
Mm. Hopefully I pronounced it correctly. The DP was Jess Hall, whose other notable films include Hot Fuzz, Transcendence, and the upcoming WandaVision.
Yeah! Yay!
I think it's like January 15th. Super stoked. The editor for Son of Rambo is Dominic Leung. Dominic Leung, whose other notable films include The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, Catch Me, Daddy. Ooh, I felt weird saying that out loud. And 4 episodes of Adult Material. Now I feel even weirder about saying Catch Me, Daddy. Music for Son of Rambo is by Joby Talbot, whose other notable films include The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, I'm Noticing Theme, Sing, and Penelope.
This movie starred Dudgeon.
Mm-hmm.
Played Joshua. They are known for the TV show Midsummer Murders, Messiah, and the other TV show Life of Riley. We have Bill Milner, who played Will Proudfoot. They are known for Is Anybody There? Anthropoid, as well as X-Men First Class. Then we have Jessica Hines, who plays Mary Proudfoot, who is known for Shaun of the Dead. Shaun! The TV show Spaced, and the other TV show, The Royal Family. And we have Will Poulter, who plays Lee Carter. They are known for so many things, including The Maze Runner, the first and third movies, I believe, We're the Millers, and Detroit.
We also have Paul Ritter as the geography teacher, who is known for... Is it supposed to be
Quantum?
Quantum of Solace? Because it says Quantum of Solace. And I'm done with the podcast.
Episode over.
Goodbye, 41, y'all. It's been good. Oh, God. Oh, God. The disaster that was Hannibal Rising and The Libertine. We have Jules Citric as Didier Rivol, who is known for Without Family, Mary Magdalene, and The Other Son. And we have Ed Westwick as Lawrence Carter, known for the TV show Gossip Girl, Children of Men, and the TV show White Gold.
I had to look up who he was in Children of Men, and it still took me a hot second. And I just, like, stared and stared because there aren't really any, like, screenshots of him. And then I was like, oh, it's because he's in it for, like, 2 seconds. Mm. He's, like, the one disabled kid at the table with the weird hand computer. Literally in it for like 2 seconds. It's not super prominent. But I was like, oh yeah. There's not a lot of information on this movie, this tiny, tiny little movie. A weird actor note we have. Director Edgar Wright, who plays the shop teacher.
Oh, yeah.
Garth Jennings and Nick Goldsmith also appear as zombies in Edgar Wright's Shaun of the Dead film. So we have two little cameos in each other's films.
So they just like beep boop in each other's movies. I like that.
Beep boop.
The budget for Son of Rambo is 4.5 million British pounds sterling, which is approximately 6 million USD. And the film earned approximately 10.1 million USD. Reception, critically, aggregate score on Rotten Tomatoes of 73% and sitting on Metacritic with a 66. Audience, Rotten Tomatoes aggregate of 79% and an IMDb audience score of a 7.0.
People liked this movie, like audience people over, like, critics liked this movie.
I mean, yeah, a 79 and a 7.
79 is kind of high.
Yeah.
Anyway, random interesting facts from IMDb and Wiki.
IMDb.
Jan Pinkava, who appears in the movie on the real television show Screen Test and won the Young Filmmakers Competition of the Year award, later went on to write and co-direct Ratatouille for Disney Pixar.
That's awesome. That makes me happy in my chest space. A stage musical adaptation has been workshopped by Nuffield Southampton Theatres in association with the Other Palace in London, where it was presented from May 24th to June 2nd, 2018.
The movie was inspired by Jennings' own experiences as a child in the 1980s when video equipment first became available to the public. And the film recreates the atmosphere of an English comprehensive school of the time, using a soundtrack of both familiar and lesser-known pop tracks from the era.
Mm-hmm. It has a really great soundtrack. The two roads where both boys lived are approximately 1,200 meters apart, being located next to Berkhamsted Castle. They are the two most exclusive residential roads in the town.
Super random facts.
You find what you can find.
Technical spiech. Runtime is an hour 36 for a total of 96 minutes. Sound mix is SDDS, DTS, Dolby Digital. Our aspect ratio is 2.35 to 1, which is anamorphic. Camera used was a Panavision Panaflex Millennium XL2 with Panavision C and E series lenses. It was filmed on actual film, which was about 2,600 meters. If I remember correctly, that's maybe 8 reels. I can't remember. Negative format's 35 millimeter, which is the same as the printed film format. And the cinematographic process is anamorphic Panavision.
All right.
Ta-da!
Be-da-be-boo-boo.
Cool.
Do this.
Direccione! That was like the fastest info bit we've done.
Fastest info dump.
Direction. For a first feature film that he also wrote, this is certainly an accomplishment. I think that this movie could be at least semi-autobiographical, which I didn't know when writing this note that it was.
Do you think so, Jules? Do you think it could be?
I think it could be. I think there is a possibility that he used some of his life influences, life experiences
from
this movie.
The 80s?
70s.
Oh. I'm going to fail this test.
Pay attention. Parentheses, which interesting facts as it is. That really lends itself to the feeling of authenticity that this movie gives off. There's some tropiness to be had, but I feel like that's kind of expected with a coming-of-age story and that kind of, especially when dealing with younger characters. This dude and his partner that did the, whatever their production studio is, I already forgot, mostly do music videos.
Right.
Until he kind of sprouted off a bit with his big feature films, which I think is super interesting.
I'm always impressed with directors who can wrangle children. This is no exception. Garth Jennings managed to pull fantastic performances from the two main actors and the supporting cast, and he put together a narrative of the film within a film that mostly works. and created a movie that made me cry without being overtly preachy or unoriginal. I applaud his ability to do all of these things because separately doing any of them is difficult, and he managed to check all of the boxes. So, pretty impressive.
Yeah. Writing. I love the immediate juxtaposition between the two boys, even though it's kind of tropey. This is an interesting take on two boys not getting their needs met at home and finding a fulfilling, though initially unlikely, friendship in each other as they make a movie.
Yes, you just summarized the film. Thank you.
Yeah. Cool, thanks.
Like, write that on the back of the movie. I'll rent it.
I should write all of the summaries for movies. Straight and to the point.
Will you take over my work?
No.
Everyone tells me I need more brevity in my life.
I know.
Fuck you.
Oh, man, it's been a while since we've seen the movie, and now we're recording. I think there are interesting bits of foreshadowing in this movie, like the turned over truck is a sign of the crash at the end. And there's a lot of just repeating elements that we see sort of as, you know, ordinary objects that later end up in the movie. And I think that's just a little more apparent in this sort of movie. Because, you know, it's just writing. That's the thing that happens. Your face.
My face is the thing that happens.
Yes. You just
a fucking disaster.
You just look like you're about to fall asleep on me. Yeah. Anyway, I'm rambling at this point. I love that we get to see what Will imagined in his dream come to life via their movie, and that the quality for children having made it is pretty spot on. Like, his vision was pretty realized, which is super hard to do as someone who's made animated and live-action films, shorts. It's hard. It's hard just penning anything and getting anything out. Anyway, the relationship between the two boys feels so natural and evolves similarly from start to finish. And I think that's one of my favorite aspects of this movie, is just the two little boys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I am fascinated by a lot of the tools used here to build character for the kids. The use of Will's religion, such as, like, the little detail where he's not allowed to watch television, him spitting into the fishbowl.
Gross.
And, like, recording the months, Lee living in a mansion connected to a senior home specifically. These are all kind of really offbeat character traits. Mm-hmm. But they're not strange enough to be outside of the realm of belief. And I really like that. These kids are very fleshed out characters because of these small details that don't necessarily build into anything bigger or have any bigger meaning. But I appreciate that a lot. There isn't a lot of falling into stereotypes with the two main characters separately, even if, you know, you mentioned their meeting being a little bit tropey and there are certain tropes that this movie falls into. But they're quirky enough on their own. I really like them. And the humor in this film is fantastic. It takes a lot to make me laugh at movies, but the combination of Will's innocent slash ignorance and Lee's sharp, brash wit provided such a nice balance. What fell flat for me was the entire Didier bit.
Yes.
I didn't find much humor in the character at all, actually, or the just, like, all of the tropiness of, like, the French exchange student and culture.
More on just, like, his section. But, yeah, no, I totally,
same.
Totally agree. Or I think in editing, maybe I comment on that a bit. But, yeah.
Will. Billiam.
What a precious little boy. I feel so bad for him in the beginning when you can kind of see how uncomfortable he is with the lifestyle that's been forced upon him. And then I'm so gleeful when he's fully, you know, finally able to act out his imagination as they make their movie. And just, you know, it's kind of to be expected that I'm a bit sorrowful when he goes against his friend to kind of fit in. And it's just like, you're like, no, don't do that. You're not supposed to do that. He's your actual friend. You know, he's trying to fit in with this new and exciting crowd who want to help him make this movie, which that is also exciting. So, I felt torn because he's like, he's getting the support that he needs and he's actually able to branch out. But, you know, Lee's the, like, the person that he needs.
I kind of agree with you. I go on a roller coaster with him. Mm-hmm. I want to hug him. I want to ruffle his hair. I want to adopt him. And I want to metaphorically smack him upside the head. I say that last bit because I hate the way he treats Lee toward the end, but I also understand it. You know, I think we're pretty much in the same boat here. Like, this poor kid who's trying to deal with a huge amount of grief is finally making friends. He's kind of the center of attention. He doesn't want to lose anybody else, so he starts to push people away instead, which is just a really common thing to see with kids in trauma. And I think that makes him a really complex character, especially for a kid, and especially for a kid in a movie. Kids in film are very often one-dimensional, mm-hmm. and yeah. these two are not, and mm-hmm. I love that. I think his innocence is adorable and makes him so heartwarming to watch, and I'm so happy that he gets to show how big his heart is at the end, yeah. and like you mentioned, word for word, I have to, and get the support that he needs eventually. Mm-hmm. I hate the journey he has to go through to get it, but glad that he does.
Yeah. Lee Carter.
Lee Carter.
Lee might be my favorite character. He's pretty obnoxious at first, but you quickly find out that it's basically just him and his older brother fending for themselves at an age that is far too young. You know, he's acting out because he isn't getting the attention that he should be at home, but finds at least a little bit of it in Will. And you can get to see that he does have a really kind heart for how mm-hmm. he steps up for his brother, even though his brother doesn't treat him the way that he should. Mm-hmm. And eventually, you know, you can see in his interactions with Will, like when, you know, they become blood brothers, how actually, like, tender he actually is.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, for me, he's the main character for me, because I think you just see a lot of him, and you get a lot of exposition of him, a lot of layers peeled back. You know, there are technically, I think, like, you spend the most time with Will and Lee, and I think Will is technically the main character, you know, the son of Rambo, and that's who he plays in, you know, their film and things like that. But for me, watching it, I was definitely the most intrigued by Lee as well. I think he was my favorite also. He has the most depth to me and was the easiest to connect to. This is also a kid who's experienced loss in a very different way, and to me in a way that's almost harder than experiencing the death of a parent. His parent's still alive and still around, but simply chooses not to be with him. And, like, all of the things that he does is, he's a kid. It's for attention. It's for connection. And it all makes perfect sense. And the pain and empathy that I feel for him when he gets the cold shoulder from his brother and then from Will, it just breaks my heart. Lee's story is the saddest in the film for me, and I hate that it took for him to get seriously hurt for the assholes around him to wake up and start treating him kindly. Mm-hmm. Also, I'm sorry, but this kid is funnier than most every adult that I know or have ever met. So, again, with the depth,
funny as Lee Carter,
as like this 10-year-old child or however the fuck old they're supposed to be.
I don't know how old they're supposed to be in the film, but I think they were like 13 when they filmed.
Yeah, yeah,
12, 13 when they filmed.
That makes sense. Yeah,
DDA. The only thing I like about DDA is his name. This kid is so obnoxious, but in a different way than Lee, it seems, and it's super interesting how all three of the main boys are outcasts of some kind and find companionship and similar interests in one another, even though they all come from completely different backgrounds.
Yeah.
DDA's iteration, however, is my least favorite by far. Mm-hmm. However, it would have been interesting to see, unless I somehow missed it, to know a little more about his background and why he is the way that he is.
Yeah, for sure. I just think he's an overwritten character, and he's interesting to me precisely one time, and that's when he gets back onto the bus with the other exchange students. He's interesting to me for 2 seconds, and it's the last 2 seconds we spend with him. Only after the first watch and during the second did I even care about him. And that was after I got to see how he was mistreated by his fellow French students. Because the first watch, you don't give a shit. The second watch, you're like, oh, I know that he's looking for companionship and he's making this and this is meaningful to him and he's not going to want to go back and it makes you have feeling. That's not a good thing to me that you don't get any of that upon the first watch. You need something.
In the beginning or because
it surprised me. And mm-hmm. I was like, oh, a lot of things that made zero sense now, but not in a good way.
Yeah.
During the first watch, he was an absolutely ridiculous character, and he still was on the second, but at least then I could see him as more of a kid with actual feelings and not just, like, a caricature completely, because that's what he is. He's a caricature. Mm-hmm. He doesn't even feel like a character.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of how this character was handled at all.
Joshua. I don't know why I say Joshua like that.
You always do.
It's probably because of our friend Joshua.
Joshua. Josh.
Yo, step off. Basically the same as every other religious leader-ish stereotype. Bit of a boring antagonist, but I guess that's somewhat the point. I don't know. There's not a lot to say about Joshua. Mm-hmm. I guess I kind of want to kick him in the teeth.
Yeah, he's definitely the most antagonistic force of the film, but it's hard to even completely hate this dude because he's very beige.
I hate beige.
He's also trying to do what he believes is best for Will. I don't have a fond opinion of any organized religion, so it would be easy for me to say, fuck this guy. However, he's trying to help in the way that he knows how.
He seems over-controlling.
Even if he's being overbearing and an asshole about the whole thing.
Yeah.
His character is very one-dimensional in that he simply seems to be like an embodiment or a stand-in for the face of the church that's oppressing Will and his family.
Yeah.
So once again, there's this one-dimensional character, and that's why he seems like such a prick.
Yeah.
But really, he's just like this dude who knows one way of life. What other way does he know other than to be, you know, the head, the patriarch of this family that's supposed to want to be in this church? He thinks this is what is right and they need and blah, blah, blah. It's just, it's not well done either. I don't think his character is well done either. So,
Lawrence Carter. I don't have notes for him. There's not a lot about him. You know, we get this build up from Lee and how great Lee thinks he is. And, you know, you get snippets here and there of how much of a twat he is. And you can feel that and you can see that up until the very end when it's revealed that he's like, he helped finish the film. And he's like, oh, you're not, I guess, a hopeless case after all. And hopefully you've learned from this experience. But who knows? Because we don't get enough of him. He's also another kind of not fleshed out character.
Oh. Whoa, that noise you just made.
Sorry. Your huh of disagreement. I know what that sound is. We're not talking about DDA.
Sorry.
Nobody laughed like that in the movie. Ow, my tooth.
Everything's a mess. So, this Lawrence Carter. This is a dynamic character presented as a one-dimensional character throughout most of the film.
And okay, miss, I'm getting my master's degree in writing.
And I appreciate him being in this film as character.
I didn't say he wasn't needed. He's totally needed. Anyway.
He seems like such a dick. But when you get these little scenes sprinkled in and consider that he's also an abandoned child who's been left to care for his younger brother with no say in the matter, who also needs and wants and misses his parents, it's easy to develop empathy for him and see where his disconnect or his misplaced feelings of resentment toward Lee might come from.
Yeah.
And I like his representation in the film because, like, if I were, you know, you don't know how old he was. Was he, like, 13 when suddenly he has a child to take care of? I would resent the fuck out of that child. I didn't make it. It's not my responsibility. I have this snot-nosed little fucker who gets in trouble all the time. And that's what I would think as a 12-year-old. You know, you don't understand dynamics like that. It makes perfect sense why he would do this. And then you do get that moment of realization of he's on the phone. It's like, well, this isn't a good time for me either. You know, he tells that to his mom, and it's just like, I think he has the moment the audience has where she's like, how could this woman and how could everybody basically treat Lee this way?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I really appreciated how they used Lawrence's character in this film.
Mary Proudfoot.
Mary.
That's Will's mom. She's interesting. I like our little, like, flashback that we get with her, like, even though I don't like their religion at all, but it's an interesting kind of her trying to kind of connect and kind of make him understand, like, what's happening while giving us a little, I feel like it's almost a little bit of foreshadowing that she was so interested in this thing, and that's kind of what Will ends up doing, and then she's like, yeah, we're not going to do that again. You go do what you want to do. So it's like a, I don't know. She's She's a little frustrating in the beginning for obvious reasons because, you know, she's being pretty strict with and really aggressive and mean to everybody and just shoving food into grandma's face. And then she kind of has her aha moment and is like, we're not doing this anymore. Be free.
Just as we're seeing a child grieving in Will, we're also seeing a mother and wife grieving. So I have empathy for her as well. She has to go against an entire lifetime of ingrained learning in her church in order to eventually do what's best for her family. And even though it takes her longer than we may like, that shit's hard. Mm-hmm. That takes a lot of strength. So that's like overcoming generational trauma.
Yeah.
And brainwashing. So that's, you know, that's a bad bitch right there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Production design.
Production.
I love the exterior of the Proudfoot house, and the interior is so plain. You can tell what kind of lifestyle this family lives without even having that very first scene, I feel. It's just very simple, and they don't really have a whole lot of possessions.
Yeah.
But that exterior, man, I'd love to see that house. All of Will's books and drawings are so fun and fantastical. It reminds me of me when I was a kid, just filling notebook after notebook. Not quite to that extent, but I can relate. Something I always want more of, and just so many things, and I don't know if it's just because I kind of have a background in it, and it's something that I've always enjoyed, is, you know, the dream sequence with the drawings overlaid on the footage. You know, it also has that effect of making it feel like Will's drawings. So there's that nice tie-in between, you know, the physical art that we get to see that production has done for Will and an animated style overlaid.
I absolutely adore Will's art, especially in the bathroom stall at school. I like the notebook too, but I love the stall. It's whimsical, and it's just so good. I love the stories it tells and the escapism it provides for him. It provides a glimpse into his huge imagination that doesn't get to escape elsewhere until he meets Lee. Mm-hmm. Like, this is just where he goes, the place he needs. Can I please have Lee's garage / shop / studio / whatever the hell you might want to call it?
His mansion garage? Yeah.
Yeah. That.
It's mansion garage.
Mansion garage.
It's two-story garage.
That, whatever the fuck it is, I want it. Didier's aesthetic is so much fun. I seriously think the wardrobe designer watched a bunch of, like, Japanese visual key music videos and then designed his wardrobe. If anybody here listening knows what reference I just made or understands anything I just said, fucking find me because I need you to be my friend.
That's probably why I didn't like it.
My soul just escaped my body.
I'm not a fan of the visual key.
Oh my god, you just sounded like an old person. I'm not a fan of the visual key. The visual key. I don't know how to use the Google.
I apparently don't because I couldn't find movies about movies. I'm like,
dying. Help me.
No.
She's just gonna let me die.
Bye.
Goodbye. Oh, God. I love everything involved in the making of the kids' film within the movie. The shitty prop design, the shitty wardrobe that actually looked like a child would make it, the shitty cameras used, and the adorable paper credits created. It is all cute as shit.
Yeah.
Yep.
Cinematography.
Cinematography. I love the panning shot that we get on Will when he is up in the canoe. Seeing Rambo for the first time in Will's house, the TV is down near the floor, he's up there. We start from far away and pan upward, fixed on Will's kind of very entranced face, watching him absorb the experience of this film for the first time. We hear it play in the background. We get to see him kind of instantly connect and become hypnotized by the action on screen, and I really just like the way the shot brings us into the moment with him. I like that a lot. Another really nice shot is Will walking. He's walking past the school building toward the camera, and the school building takes up the entire right side of the screen. It's like split in half, and Lee just kind of shoots out of the brick wall and pulls Will into it. It's aesthetically pleasing initially, and then it's just fun. There's just brick wall half the screen, Lee shoots out, and then Will just like disappears into the brick wall, and I really just love that shot. It's really, really fun. My favorite shot might be of Will toward the end in the hospital chair getting stitches. Mm. He's caked in grease. He has his Son of Rambo get up on. He's bleeding. It literally looks like he's been through a war. The shot is just head on and it centers him. And it's probably the most direct and unforgiving shot in the film. We're seeing Will coming to terms with the consequences of his actions. And the camera just doesn't pull any punches. Like, you just see this beaten and broken physically and emotionally broken child, and it's just a really beautiful and heartbreaking shot.
Quick fun fact, apparently the nurse stitching him up is the director's wife.
Cute. Thank you for that.
It's a fun little camera move when Will moves to hide from Lee in the school hallway, only to have him, like, move back and get hit with the ball.
Yeah.
Yes. You're literally, like, following him as he's moving, so it's like it's an interesting, like, tracking shot while almost also kind of standing still. Anyway, two separate wide shots in the Carter garage, the first of Lee and the second of Lawrence, are so nice, and they do a really good job of making the two boys look really small. Mm-hmm. Especially Lawrence, because he's seeing and understanding exactly how shitty he's been to his little brother. Even as he's standing, he looks, you know, just as small as Lee did in the previous shot earlier in the movie, while Lee isn't in the chair. I don't think I noticed this the first time, but the shot of Will kind of practicing his kung fu moves in the kitchen, and then Joshua, glancing through the little window in the door. He almost has to do like a double take, but it's so tiny, and it's literally like up in the corner of the screen, and it's, I don't know, I just like never noticed it and just happened to on our last watch, and I was like, oh, that's great. I love the one hallway scene in the school of all the boys walking down the hallway. They like come through the doors and they're about to go to their little clubhouse or whatever with like the older kids.
Mm-hmm.
And it's you know, it's kind of a lower angle, kind of looking up at the boys, and that just kind of amplifies the feel that these boys think they are larger than life at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I think they do that a couple times. Yeah.
Nice. Editing. I really enjoy a lot of the transitions. I like seeing Will soaking wet, sitting down outside of the principal's office right after we see the fishbowl crash to the floor. The transitions in the film speed up past storytelling that we don't need to see and helps the film flow without being bogged down. There are a lot of nicely done transitions that lead us from one scene to the next pretty fluidly and without notice, which I like. We can infer, and I like a director that trusts that we can infer without jamming information.
Yeah, I think that's something that a lot of non-American directors do.
Yes, I appreciate
and
the shit out of it.
American directors need to take notes.
Yes, we're not dumb.
We aren't that dumb. Yeah. Some people are, mm-hmm. but
yeah, like I think foreign film is superior in many ways, and mm-hmm. I think this is one of them.
Yeah.
You know, trust the audience. The editing of the animated portion was really fun when Will was imagining himself as the son of Rambo, but I didn't like the disconnect. I thought he was daydreaming in the field, but then he wakes up in his bed directly after as though he were dreaming, mm-hmm. like sleeping and dreaming. And I found it really confusing chronologically.
Interesting.
Yeah. I do feel like there were some super unnecessary scenes. Lee washing the windows while he was suspended from school, for example. The teacher in the teacher's lounge getting scared by the flying dog prop. There were literally no narrative purposes for these scenes, for example, and they occur during the midpoint of the film when things start to kind of fall apart for me pacing-wise.
So it's just not like a long movie. It feels like there's a bit of filler.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, damn it. I'm out of tea already.
Damn.
Well, you were so busy earlier with your Spotify.
I'm sorry. My wrap-up came, and I'm fascinated by the results. And no, Hamilton was not my number one. It was my numbers 2 through 5, technically. With
anyway,
I'm so distracted by that. Thank you. Yeah, speaking of, there is a major lull in the middle of the film for me.
Mm-hmm.
When Didier gets involved in the filmmaking process, from the beginning of the flying dog scene until Lee shows up at Will's house to apologize, everything in between, I feel like everything takes hours to go down. The beginning and the end are paced so nicely, but the middle drags for me, and it makes me wish that this film was literally just Lee and Will.
Yeah, I feel almost like this this could have been a short, this could have been like a 45 minute short film.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Best beginning cut to a movie, the Bible, reading the Bible into Rambo.
Yes, yes. It deserves to be said.
There's a lot of comedic timing with the cutting. One example being when Lee is stealing the bike and Will questions how he's supposed to ride it while injured. Then we cut to Lee in the trailer when Will pedaling.
That is a good one.
There's a lot of those sort of interactions between the two that are really fun, especially because of Lee's character. I really enjoy the cutting between Will and the footage of Rambo when he's seeing it for the very first time, coupled with the overlaid audio of the movie. Mm-hmm. It's just it does a nice job drawing you in as the audience to what's happening as he's being drawn in, and you literally are feeling what's happening mm-hmm. in the movie. I feel like I could use a little less of DDA. But some of the extremely short scenes we have with him and his posse set up plot points for later on, and I just wish that that was handled differently. And not all of them do, so mm-hmm. you're kind of like, why did this happen? This doesn't come back later. That comes back later. That's fine. And it's just, get out of here, DDA.
Mm-hmm. DDA is not wanted anywhere.
Poor DDA.
Right?
The pacing drags here and there, but overall it's kind of fine. You make a valid point with your kind of lull in the middle chunk. Most of the editing is average. On second watch, I kind of found myself wondering how much time we had left every so often, though I never checked. Music. The music is super quirky for the most part, with the contrasting horns and flutes for the theme. That kind of plays every so often. It also has this pretty whimsical feel to it that not only matches the feel of Will's drawings, but the sort of innocent imagination of the children as they make their film, plus all of the poppy pop pop songs.
Pop it a pop 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 pop. I love the music that plays when Didier's on screen. It's always kind of dreamlike or incredibly over the top or quirky. It's character appropriate and adds a layer of humor. Like, it's so different when he comes on screen. That's the one thing that makes me laugh about him. I also really dig the soundtrack of the party scene. Like, those six-year kids know how to pick some damn tracks. otherwise, the music's, like, mostly, like, just lovely understated in the background, as it should be. Mm-hmm. So, yep.
Performances.
Performances.
Okay. Bill Milner. I know we've seen him in shit. I could just never, like, recall him. But he does such a wonderful job playing this super, you know, kind of lost boy that gets this opportunity and is just so enthusiastic mm-hmm. and adorable and innocent. Like, I would just imagine that that's how he is in real life. And, like I said, I don't know how old they were doing quick math for Will Poulter. I think he was about 13, and I think the two boys are about the same age. So they were about 13 when they filmed, which, I mean, is still young, mm-hmm. but you're kind of getting to that point where they are kind of aware of life, I feel. And I don't know. I feel like the children that they are portraying are a little younger, mm-hmm. and it's just, you have them at an age where they can perform better than kids, like, the actual age that they're portraying. I don't know. He did a great job.
Okay.
I'm sleepy.
I agree. I think he did a great job across the board. But with him, one thing that I could really feel was his unbridled joy. When he portrayed Will as being happy, it was impossible not to smile. The happiness that he brought to this character, just in the more upbeat, carefree scenes, were the absolute highlights of his performances. You see him run the gamut of sad and angry and fill in the blank, but when he made this kid happy, I mean, you could feel it coming off of the screen, and it was so lovely.
You could he had fun.
Yes,
he did. You could tell that he and I think the other kids had fun.
Mm-hmm. Which is great. Mm-hmm. I like the thought of that a lot.
I can't imagine their production days because kids can only work for so long. So, like, I can't imagine trying to budget that out and schedule that out. But just, they had fun.
Yeah, I hope so.
Will Poulter. He is the goddamn highlight of this movie. He's amazing, and it's no wonder that he's landing the roles that he is now. Like, this is, I think, his first movie.
Oh.
He may have won before. I think this is his first movie, and he knocks it out of the park. He does so great. He also runs the gambit of emotions, and while his crying at the end is what it is, not, like, amazing, but, like, you still feel bad for him. That's not even a thing to criticize of a little boy.
His crying at the end.
When he saves Will from the tar pit.
Okay.
And he's just kind of like, it's that gritty crying where he's, you know, he's trying not to cry.
I was going to say, because his crying at the movie theater is amazing.
No, when he saves Will.
Yeah,
saves
I know what you're talking about.
But yeah, yeah, I don't know what to say about the kid. He did great. He did fucking great.
Yeah, I mean, apparently there's never been a time in history where Will Poulter wasn't an amazing performer. I really love this dude. You know that. I love him. I get so excited when I see him in anything.
I always forget that it's him.
Yes, you do.
And we're the Millers.
Yes, you do.
I always forget it's
you
him.
Always
I don't know what
it's
you...
him always. Always. Or you have the moment of like, oh, it's Will Poulter. I've heard you say those four words in succession in a row more times than I can count in like the last 8 years of my
life. He's so versatile.
He is.
He's just gotten
fucking
better and better.
Bandersnatch, like, man. That was so good.
Yeah,
he was so good at
that. He's the character that he is in the Maze Runner series. Mm-hmm. I don't know if people have or haven't seen it. It is what it is.
You should.
Yeah.
I mean, the books are great. Dylan O'Brien. Sorry. Go on.
To Detroit, to We're the Millers. Like, those are all very different films.
Absolutely.
And he is very different in all. Like, you don't see, it's another instance where you don't see a previous character in this new role and, like, vice versa.
Absolutely. It's just really easy to see that he's a natural. He's been incredibly skilled ever since being put in front of a camera. I cried the first time and teared up the second time during his delivery of his speech to Will about his brother, the one you were just talking about. And I cried both times at the end watching him in the movie theater, just kind of crying, seeing his movie, seeing his film. Like, he did a great job at that end scene. Like, oh, like, this kid, he just knows how to act and bring a character to life.
Yeah. Jules Strick. As much as I didn't like this character, I think he did a fine job doing these quirky things. Like, I almost feel like maybe he was kind of wasted, or if we had somebody else that I would have hated the character more. Mm. Like, he kind of, I don't know, he made, his performance was good as this character, even though I hated how the character was written and handled. So, I mean, good on you, kid.
I feel like this would have been one of the more challenging roles for a child to play. Like, for a kid to play aloof, for an actor to play a bad actor, if that makes sense. He did a good job also. I wish he would have had a more multifaceted role to work with. I did enjoy his kind of forced nonchalance, and I think he pulled off a pretty good bitch face.
Yeah, I mean, he, you know, at the end where they crash the car and he's like, has to drop his facade.
Yeah.
And, like, he does a really good job with that. Yep. Like, I think that's kind of where he comes out, or his ability comes out.
Absolutely. Cetera.
Why is everyone literally everyone is smoking in the movie theater.
Yeah, dude.
Literally everyone has a cigarette in their mouth.
There's probably a little bit of satire there.
Probably.
I hope
so. But, like, literally, I was watching the second time. Every single face has a cigarette in their mouth. Not just, like, casually having it out in their hand. It's in their mouth. Both times. That's not anywhere else in the movie. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think you really see anybody except DDA smoking in the movie. Maybe at the party. But you just go, you pop to the movie theater, got a cigarette in my mouth.
I don't know, man. Maybe it was
like
the thing.
It's a requirement to watch this movie.
You must.
You don't have to smoke, it's just gotta be in your mouth, and it's gotta be lit. Mm. The cheering when Joshua leaves is a nice callback to when Lee leaves the classroom and the children cheer at the beginning of the movie.
Good catch. That just makes me feel really sad, though. Because, like, one of those is deserved.
One of them is deserved, the other is not, but it's hilarious that they do it twice.
Yeah, that's a good catch.
What ambulance gives you a ride home? Or to a movie theater.
Maybe really fucking cool European ones. This is America. You're lucky an ambulance takes you to the hospital when you're dying.
Or gets to you, yeah. That's,
yeah, you're fucking real lucky. Yeah, what is this healthcare that you speak of?
I drink my tea and my
water. I'm aware you drank the water. I went to get a sip.
I'm sorry.
I was sorely disappointed.
I'm dying.
I'm not sorry. Thanks for your feelings. I can't decide if I love or hate. I like the way it was animated. But I can't decide if I love or hate the animated scene that plays out through Will's head with him as the son of Rambo. I struggle so much with cheesiness. And
yeah,
it toes the line for me without going completely over it. Because it's the imagination of a child, but it still makes me cringe a touch. It just some... And it's not the animation part. It's like the body...
like the bodysuit on
the bodysuit on him, like the bulging
muscles
on the top.
That's hilarious.
Oh, God, it hurts
so
me.
So
funny. Me. The cheesy, the
I
campy.
Oh, how are we married?
I don't know, man. This is the yin and the yang part of it. It's gotta be.
I love it.
Oof, it hurts my soul.
I like camp, though. I like camp.
Oh, my God. It takes so goddamn long for Will to fall out of that tree. And hit the ground once he falls off the branch. Oh, my God.
He's high up.
But he's not. It just takes forever.
That's because he's hitting every single branch on the way down.
I hate how long it takes.
I like how Lee ends up in the hospital, but all this shit happened to Will, and he's fine. It's a scrawny little boy. He's the son of Rambo.
Yeah. God. Didier's farewell at the end of the movie makes me have to look away from the screen. It's so over-dramatized to the point of being corny as hell and completely takes me out of the realm of taking the movie seriously at all.
He seems really awkward. Like, the actor kind of doesn't know what he's doing. Like, just watching him kind of, like, handle the stuff that he's being given. Like, he's fumbling. He, like, can't, like... That's like a real life moment in the movie.
Just like the way that they have the students overreact to him. Most scenes with him in it are cringy as hell for me. Almost everything having to do with him just like takes me out of the film.
Mm-hmm.
It's a comedy at its core, like a dramedy or whatever. But I like feeling like my feet are planted in reality, and he took me out of it. It's so hard not to smile throughout the entire short film made by the kids at the end. I almost want to do a mini review of their movie because I have favorite parts, least favorite parts, and everything. I absolutely hate Lawrence's part in the short film. It's so painful to watch, and not in an emotional way, more so in an I'm embarrassed for you, this is forced, and terrible way. To their credit, even Lee and Will acknowledge what a terrible actor he is. Otherwise, I love it all, and seeing Lee's reaction to it warms my heart so much. What's your least favorite part?
My least favorite part is the party scene for so many reasons. It's cringy overall, and it's really where it's kind of where the rift between the two boys starts, like really kind of hits hard, at least in my opinion. And just, I hate parties, and that party is like everything that I hate about parties and fear about parties. That was like a nightmare come to life for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like there's purpose to it because you're kind of seeing the difference between the boys, or like how Will's, you know, kind of fitting in with this crowd and getting the support from elsewhere, and Lee's not into it, but like,
could we have done that differently?
What was your least favorite?
Even though I like the music, I hate the sixth form party scene.
Wee!
It's cut weird with some really unnecessary shots of stills just to show the fashion of the sixth form kids.
Yeah.
The whole thing feels forced, cheesy, unrealistic, overdone, cringy, just really ridiculous. There's even, like, hella unnecessary vomit. To quote Lee, it's rubbish and I hate it.
That's probably what the director was going for, feeling-wise, and you nailed it in a not good way.
Yeah, I don't like anything about it. Even the part that was supposed to be cute, I hate. Like, the dance thing where Will just starts, like, jumping up and down, and then everybody else starts jumping. I'm just like...
Yeah, I don't need any of this.
No, this would never happen. This is not... I hate it all.
Yeah.
Yep.
What's your favorite part? Might be Will showing up to Lee's house for the first time, and he strips his jacket off and shows off his Rambo outfit, as well as the subsequent, like, stunt scenes.
Cute. I think it's the same day. My favorite part starts when Will swings into the lake, leading to Lee rescuing him, their conversation directly afterward, and their blood brother pact. Mm. It's such a sweet scene between these kids, has some really lovely exposition about the characters, and is so wonderful in that it brings humor to such a difficult subject, like grief and like abandonment. It's very heartwarming, realistic, and just really adorable.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
How'd you rate it?
I struggle busted.
Mm-hmm.
Hard.
Mm-hmm.
That
was a dramatic pause.
Sorry, I was thinking. I kept bopping between a 7 and 7.5. I wrote down a 7.5 in the end because I wrote my rating right after my favorite part. And it's because I do like the handling of the two main characters, how they wrote them separately and their bond and just, you know, it's kids with trauma. And I appreciate some of the things they did. And as a film with some of the, like, the actual filmmaking I liked, but I honestly think that they did a relatively trash job at a lot of the supporting characters and character development and things like that. Like, this could have been a great movie if they would have spent more time with other characters.
Mm. So I initially gave it a 7.5, and then as we spoke, I knocked it down to a 7.
Yeah.
Pretty much for the same reasons. There's a lot of, like, little nice things about it. Mm-hmm. The main two actors are great, and they're young and they're still great, so mm-hmm. you know, it's like bonus points. And just, you know, it's a feel-good movie.
Mm-hmm.
But there are there's kind of, you know, like the lull that you mentioned in the kind mm-hmm. of the middle of the movie, you know, we get these one-dimensional or not as fleshed out characters as they could be, or characters that we should spend more time with. And just, you know, the editing isn't amazing. And it's just that it's a weird balance of things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was good. I liked it.
Thank God.
Julia was so happy. She's like, oh my God, I think you liked it. I finally found one you think you liked.
Yeah. Jesus.
So... Yeah, and here I am, a terrible human being. I'm like, of course I liked it. It's children with trauma. It's not what I meant by that.
It's not adults with trauma. It's children with trauma.
It's not what I meant. It's getting to see children heal from trauma that I like.
Your heart looks like a butt.
You look like a butt.
Just drawing a heart on the table. It looks like a butt.
You're an asshole.
Well, you just said I look like a butt.
You're a butt who looks like an asshole. Damn it.
Oh, man.
What are we watching next week?
I don't know. It's animated.
It's animated.
I don't remember what your list is.
Welp, if it's technically, I remember three of the four movies we're watching.
What are we watching?
Oh, no, I remember all of them. It's just choosing one. We're watching an animated movie next week, folks.
Well, we're still following the thing, aren't we?
Are we?
Because I thought there was one that we'd both seen. Or no, I think there's two that we've both seen. And then there's one that you've seen and one that I've seen. Because you haven't seen The Triplets of Belleville.
I haven't, but you've seen all of the other three.
Have I?
Haven't you?
I don't know. I thought there was one that you picked that I hadn't seen.
Have you seen... Are we doing My Neighbor Totoro?
I don't know.
Is that one of them?
No.
Oh. No, because the movie that I chose was Kubo. You've seen Kubo. We're doing Spider-Verse,
mm-hmm.
Kubo, Triplets, and I don't fucking know. Duh, duh, duh. I thought we chose a Miyazaki film. It just depends on which one we ended up choosing. Are we doing Howl's? I think we might be doing Howl's Moving Castle.
I don't remember.
Anyway, there's a maybe preview of the shit we're watching this month. We'll see.
Yeah, you're the one that, like, listed everything out back in, like, September or August.
Yeah, exactly. I remember yesterday.
I don't remember this morning.
Anywho, my tea is still not gone.
I'm so parched. Jesus.
If that made audio, it you will. Have to keep it.
It will.
Is there a jump on the screen?
I mean, I every time you drink tea in episodes, like at the end, I can like you can hear it.
Hey.
Where can they find us on the? Where can they find us?
Facebook.com/ScreenTeaPodcast.
You can find us on Twitter at ScreenTeaPod.
Shoot us an email at thescreenteapodcast@gmail.com.
And you can find us on the interwebs at ScreenTeaPodcast.com.
Boop, boop. Who's Kevin Blessin for you?
Will Poulter.
What kind of evil-ass cackle laugh was that?
A sleepy one.
Let us see, shall we? I will say Kevin Bless, Bill Milner.
Hmm.
Let's get both the kids in there. Yeah. They both deserve it. They made this movie.
Yeah.
So, that's what I got.
Kevin Bliss, Will Poulter, and Bill Milner.
Mm-hmm.
All right,
I am ready to be out of here.
This is like our shortest episode.
That's okay.
In forever.
Enjoy. Is it? How long is it?
It's 108 right now. 109. Okay.
Anyway, y'all take care of yourselves and enjoy all of this holiday nonsense and shop local, please.
Yep. Bye.
Bye.